I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, prayers for the Pope. The Holy Father is admitted to a hospital for testing amid his ongoing case of bronchitis. We have a report from Rome. Do not be afraid. Vice President J.D. Vance addresses the Munich Security Conference, what he said about illegal migration pro-lifers, and the example of St. John Paul II. Abortion in America. The governors of New York and Louisiana spar over a possible first-of-its-kind case in the U.S. Plus, the story is tough to swallow. An unforgettable moment for a kayaker in Chile. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, the Holy Father is in the hospital in Rome to receive medical treatment. The Vatican announced this through a short note this morning. EWTN Vatican correspondent Colin Flynn has more.
Good evening, Tracy. Pope Francis was admitted to the Gemelli Hospital here in Rome today to be treated for ongoing bronchitis, and his appointments for the weekend and Monday have been cancelled. This is the latest setback to the health of the 88-year-old Holy Father. The Vatican released an evening bulletin stating, following the worsening of his bronchitis in recent days, the Pope has undergone specialist examinations and has begun hospital pharmacological treatment. It specified that the initial tests indicate a respiratory tract infection. His clinical condition is stable with a slight fever. The director of the Holy See reassured everyone, saying the Pope is calm and in good spirits. It was 9 days ago the Vatican announced that he was suffering from a flu, which then developed into bronchitis. He kept his appointments during the week, and I was at the Wednesday general audience just a few days ago, but you could hear that the Holy Father was struggling to speak because of lack of breath. In fact, he told people there that he was unable to read his catechesis and so handed it to a priest to read for him. Now, Pope Francis was due to host a Jubilee audience tomorrow, but that has been cancelled. He was due also to speak and preside over Mass to mark the Jubilee of Artists and World of Culture on Sunday. We're told now that that will be celebrated instead by a cardinal. On Monday, he was due to meet with a group of artists, some of them world-renowned, like director Tim Burton. We're told that too has been cancelled. He did hold some meetings this morning, including meeting with Cardinal Tagle. He also met with Mark Thompson, the president of CNN. He met the Prime Minister of Slovakia. And in a video of this meeting, which was released by the Vatican, you can see that the Pope is visibly tired. Now, while the Pope going to hospital at any time is concerning, especially at the age of 88, the Holy Father has battled bronchitis before on a number of occasions. For example, he was hospitalized in March of 2023 for 3 nights and treated with antibiotics. In December of 2023, he cancelled a visit to Dubai, again because of bronchitis. And remember, when he was a young man in Buenos Aires, he had part of one of his lungs removed after a strong dose of pneumonia. So his lungs are already compromised. It does seem his health has been declining in recent years, using a wheelchair or a cane most of the time. Also, he recently fell twice, hurting his arm and his chin. And of course, this being the Jubilee year, it will be an extra busy one for Pope Francis, with millions of pilgrims expected to be coming to the Holy City to see the Holy Father. But at the moment, that is the update at the Gemelli Hospital in Rome. Colm Flynn for EWTN News Nightly.
Okay, thank you, Colin, for that. Well, the Franciscan Missionaries of the Eternal Word, who were founded back in 1987 by Mother Angelica and provide especially for the spiritual and sacramental needs of the Eternal Word Television Network, offer a prayer for the Holy Father. Heavenly Father, we thank you for the loving service of Pope Francis and the hope he has inspired in so many in your great mercy. Have mercy on him in his illness now. We pray and guide the medical staff in his care. Grant him peace and healing through Christ our Lord. Vice President J.D. Vance invoked the name of Pope John Paul II while speaking to leaders in Europe. He defended democracy and warned about Christian persecution. Vance also joined other cabinet members overseas to discuss the war in Ukraine. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
Tracy, the vice president challenged Europe's governments to trust their people, control immigration, provide more for their own defense, and his remarks coming as the war in Ukraine grinds on.
Vice President J.D. Vance speaks to leaders gathered in Germany at the Munich Security Conference.
The threat that I worry the most about vis-a-vis Europe is not Russia, it's not China, it's not any other external actor. And what I worry about is the threat from within, the retreat of Europe from some of its most fundamental values, values shared with the United States of America.
Vance criticized Britain for charging a man for praying outside an abortion facility, and he criticized Scotland for telling people they may be breaking the law if they pray inside their own homes.
In Britain and across Europe, free speech, I fear, is in retreat.
The vice president says leaders should listen to their people because their voice matters.
As Pope John Paul II, in my view, one of the most extraordinary champions of democracy on this continent or any other, once said, "Do not be afraid." We shouldn't be afraid of our people, even when they express views that disagree with their leadership.
Later, Vance joins Secretary of State Marco Rubio as they sit across the table from Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, the Trump administration looking to end the war in Ukraine once and for all.
But we want to achieve a durable, lasting peace, not the kind of peace that's going to have Eastern Europe in conflict just a couple years down the road.
Really, we want this very much, but we need real security guarantees, and we will continue our meetings and our work.
As peace is discussed, the war drags on. Ukraine's Chernobyl nuclear plants under attack. A drone armed with a warhead hit the protective outer shell today, briefly starting a fire. The U.S. has not publicly revealed its plan to end the conflict, but Vice President Vance told the Wall Street Journal, "There are economic tools of leverage. There are, of course, military tools of leverage America could use against Russian President Vladimir Putin. But fundamentally, I think the president wants to have a productive negotiation, both with Putin and with Zelensky."
President Zelensky also said he believes President Trump is the key to ending the war in Ukraine. And Zelensky also said that President Trump gave him his phone number before today's opening of the Munich Security Conference. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
And for more, let's bring in retired U.S. Army Brigadier General Mark Kimmett. He served as Assistant Secretary of State for Political Military Affairs under President George W. Bush. Thank you so much, sir, for being with us today. We appreciate it. It has been a week of major moves for a peace deal, and we'll discuss that in just a moment. But first, what is the state of the war between Russia and Ukraine right now?
Well, it's virtually a stalemate. It looks very much like Flanders Field, World War One. Both sides are making no progress in either direction. So they're digging in. It's trench warfare at its absolute worst. And I would not expect to see any change between now and possibly the springtime when the ground hardens.
And I want to stay with the battle here. Ukraine Security Service says that Russia reported there was a drone strike on the former Chernobyl nuclear power plant. How serious is this? What more do you know about this?
Well, the reports are coming in. There are some questions about whether it was directly on one of the reactors or if it was just a drone strike in the facility itself, or candidly, if this was some propaganda put out by the Ukrainian services to heighten up the tension in the wake of potential ceasefire or peace talks.
And speaking of that, let's jump off of that. President Donald Trump said on Wednesday that Washington and Moscow will begin negotiations immediately on ending the war in Ukraine after speaking with Russian President Vladimir Putin, as you know. And this happened before he called the Ukrainian president. What do you think this signals? Talk to us more about that. And do you think it's possible that we will reach a ceasefire deal?
Well, I certainly think we'll reach a ceasefire deal. Whether we will achieve a lasting and fair peace settlement between the two parties is yet to be determined. That will be determined at the negotiating table. I don't necessarily agree with President Trump's public pronouncements on this. I think those should be held for the negotiating table and not put out in public. But we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, another thing I want to touch on as well is you may have read this in a Wall Street Journal interview. Vice President J.D. Vance said the option of sending U.S. troops to Ukraine if Moscow failed to negotiate in good faith remained on the table. Quote, he said, there are economic tools of leverage. There are, of course, military tools of leverage. Is there any chance, do you think, that the U.S. would actually send troops over?
Well, I think if the United States sent troops over, that would be done after it was declared that Ukraine was a NATO member. We don't have a security guarantee with Ukraine, and I find that comment about putting American troops on the ground to be quite odd and, in many ways, quite unrealistic.
Oh, sir, anything else before I let you go that you'd like to discuss?
Well, no, I would simply say that even if there seems to be a gentleman's agreement between Putin and Trump in terms of the general direction of the war, which is right, let's get this thing over with. But when I said a just and lasting peace, I think the devil will be in the details. I hope we don't abandon the Ukrainian people. I don't hope we don't abandon the Iraqi, Ukrainian army. They've fought too long and too hard to basically lose everything, not on the battlefield, but then lose it in the negotiating table.
All retired U.S. Army Brigadier General Mark Hemet, thank you so much, sir, for being with us. We really appreciate your insights. We now know who Hamas is expected to release this Saturday. The families of the hostages released their names today. Yair Horn, Sagi Chen, and Sasha Trufanov are set to be free after nearly 500 days in captivity. The three were taken from the same kibbutz on October 7, 2023. Earlier this week, Hamas threatened not to release them, saying Israel violated the ceasefire deal. On Monday, President Trump said the ceasefire should end if all the hostages are not released. Our Republican lawmakers in the House and Senate are proposing competing budget plans. The House wants a comprehensive single bill, while the Senate favors a two-bill approach. Republicans may face a hard choice on which one gets the nod. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales takes a look back at both of the bills and what's in them.
Good evening. The House Budget Committee met for over 12 hours and passed a House version, but it came only after House Freedom Caucus members agreed to significant tax cuts and pay-fors. Budget Committee Chair Congressman Jody Arrington praised the plan as historic.
This budget resolution provides the fiscal framework for what will be one of the most consequential pieces of legislation in modern history, and the principal legislative vehicle for delivering on President Trump's America First agenda.
Democrats say Republicans never asked for any input, and the plan does nothing for the middle class.
So what's in their budget? Nothing to bring costs down. Absolutely nothing. But what they do have is $4.5 trillion of more debt.
The House plan provides over $4 trillion in tax cuts, at least $1.5 trillion in spending cuts, including Medicaid, $300 billion in more border and national security spending.
Anytime you talk about cuts in spending, I think that's a great thing. That is a beautiful. I believe we should have tax cuts, extend them, certainly extend the tax cuts. We got to have it. It's all about economic growth.
What concerns you the most in the cuts?
Well, we want to make sure we're not affecting the disaffected, the indigent, those who are less than.
House Republican leaders hope to bring their blueprint to the House floor early next month. Meanwhile, the Senate plans to advance the much narrower budget resolution tailored to border security and defense.
The Armed Services Committee will come up with a $150 billion plan to increase spending to make our military stronger and more lethal. We'll come up with a $175 billion plan to secure the border. That will be Judiciary and Homeland Security. We'll enact that plan.
Senator Graham adds speed is of the essence.
Whatever you need to do to get the one beautiful bill, do it. Do it now. You have my blessing. You have my support. But if we can't do it quickly, we need to go to Plan B.
So what is Plan B? Senate Republicans want to pass this bill next week and then craft another bill dealing with tax cuts and other priorities later this year. House Speaker Mike Johnson has already said he will not bring up the Senate measure for a vote. Bottom line, House and Senate Republicans need to find a compromise and work out the final details. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Nearly 1,300 employees at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are being forced out. That is nearly one-tenth of the agency's workforce. It is part of the Trump administration's move to get rid of all probationary employees. The CDC's leadership was notified this morning by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including Bundle Up. Another blast of bitter cold winter weather is on its way for the United States. When and where it's going to hit. And learn why a New York abortion doctor is facing legal trouble for prescribing abortion pills in several states. Polar vortex is descending upon the U.S. for the 10th time this winter. Meteorologists expect this one to be the chilliest of the season. The large area of cold air that spins over the North Pole will dip into the U.S. The National Weather Service predicts that nearly every state except California, Hawaii, and Florida will likely feel wind chills of 20 degrees or below throughout the next week. But before that happens, prepare for a winter storm tracking from the west starting today to the east coast on Sunday. Well, from icy winds, we now go to torrential rains in Southern California, where the weather is not getting any better. Take a look at this video right here. Cars buried in mud up to its headlights, and this one swept off the highway into an ocean. This comes as the strongest atmospheric river of the season hits the region. Even though the heavy rain has started to ease a bit, there is still a high risk of mudslides in scorched areas where the vegetation was burned away by the wildfires. Well, a federal judge has temporarily put the brakes on President Trump's executive order banning so-called gender-affirming care for minors. The executive order prohibits the use of hormones, puberty blockers, and surgical procedures on young people under the age of 19. A judge in Maryland blocked the order after seven families with transgender-identifying children filed a lawsuit. The temporary block will remain in effect for 2 weeks. A New York doctor has been fined for sending abortion pills to a patient in Texas. Louisiana is currently trying to extradite that same doctor on charges of prescribing abortion pills to a minor. But Governor Kathy Hochul says she will not sign an extradition order for Dr. Margaret Carpenter. This is setting the stage to test New York's Shield laws, which gives legal protections to doctors who send abortion medication to states where abortions are banned. And joining us now to explain is Katie Glenn Daniels, Director of Legal Affairs at Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America. Katie, great to see you as always. So walk us through this case and explain to us what exactly a Shield Law is.
So a Shield Law is a law that blue states have passed basically saying that if an abortionist breaks the law in another state, say in Louisiana or Texas, where they have strong pro-life laws, as long as they don't leave New York, there's nothing that New York government can do to assist in the prosecution or in a lawsuit that's filed against them in a pro-life state. So in these cases, there's the same doctor, Dr. Margaret Carpenter, who sent at least two women, two that we know of, one in Texas and one in Louisiana, to the hospital after sending these abortion drugs through the mail. The states are seeking justice for those victims, and New York is saying no.
Yeah. And Katie, I understand right now there are eight states that have these Shield laws. Do you think the outcome of these cases will be a factor in whether or not the states pass a Shield law?
It certainly seems clear to us that the idea of a Shield law saying that you will not participate in a lawful either criminal investigation or in a civil lawsuit that's brought by another state is unconstitutional under the U.S. Constitution. There's something called full faith and credit that says that we recognize the judgments of other courts, and Shield laws obviously go against that. So I think if we can go into federal court with these cases and show that these Shield laws are unconstitutional, it would stop other states from following New York's terrible path.
Yeah, and apparently Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York, says she's not going to sign an extradition order for that doctor. What do you think is going to happen here? I mean, do you think that's going to stand?
Well, I think in the long term, our pro-life states are going to have to go into federal court. And these are cases that actually the Supreme Court could hear very quickly because they have jurisdiction directly over disputes between the states. So we could see SCOTUS weighing in on this very soon. But at the end of the day, we cannot have a nation of states that cooperate together if some states decide not to do that. And in particular, if you listen to what Kathy Hochul says, she doesn't care about the facts of this case at all. She never mentions these young women or the fact that they ended up in the hospital, or even that one of them had a desired pregnancy and these drugs were forced upon her. For her, it's all about protecting the rights and freedoms of the abortion doctor to avoid responsibility.
Thank you so much for coming on and sharing all this with us and for your expertise, as always. We appreciate it. God bless.
Thank you.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, a whale of a tale. A kayaker got quite the surprise on the open ocean. We have video and we'll show you what happened next. Plus, it is a day of love and a day of virtue. Why chastity should be celebrated this Valentine's Day. Pope Francis's hospitalization, the Jubilee of Arts and the World of Culture will take place as scheduled over the weekend. In an interview with EWTN News, Cardinal Mendonca explained the importance of art to proclaim the gospel and its message of hope.
I think there isn't anyone who, upon entering the Sistine Chapel, does not feel moved. The church is attentive to culture, and it cannot be otherwise, because Christianity is an incarnate reality, culturally translated. That is why culture is very important. And within cultures, artists hold a special place, because they have the ability to make the mystery visible or audible. In this sense, artists are collaborators of the church in the search for truth and in translating the mystery of God into a perceptible language.
Cardinal Mendonca, who will preside over the Jubilee's Holy Mass instead of Pope Francis on Sunday, emphasized how many popes throughout history have spoken of the power of art to captivate and express the beauty and truth of the faith. Pope Francis himself has stated that the Church's friendship with the arts is something quite natural. I thank artists for their work and efforts to render glory to God. Well, Valentine's Day is a day for love and romance, but in today's world, many can be confused by their desires. That said, the virtue of chastity is one that we can strive to incorporate into our daily lives. And joining us now to talk more about chastity and how it can bring us closer to God is Anna Carter. She is the co-founder and president of the Eden Invitation Outreach to Millennial Catholics who are experiencing same-sex attraction. Anna, great to be with you today. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. So first off, a lot to talk about, but tell us a little bit about your story and what kept you in the Catholic Church.
Wow, that is a great question. Yeah, so for me growing up, I recognized in high school that I experienced attraction to other women, but I also was really into youth group and had these beautiful experiences of prayer and community, and I knew that the church was home. So actually, I think for my journey, a lot of it has been, okay, this isn't really going away, and how do I work this out? What does discipleship look like? What does friendship look like? What is vocation look like in the midst of all of this? And Eden Invitation really flowed out of that, really trying to create community for other people wrestling with sexuality and gender in the church and world today.
Yeah, and I know in one article you quoted the Catechism definition of chastity, meaning the successful integration of sexuality within the person and thus the inner unity of man in his bodily and spiritual being. And you wrote that to be chaste, you really need to be aware of the whole picture in your life. Talk to us more about that.
Right. You know, I think that we're holding all of us, right? Whatever is, you know, going on inside of us, we're holding on to both, you know, if we want to get philosophical, the ontological reality, right? So my embodiment, for me personally, that's as a woman, right? This awareness of our body and soul and the reality that that has for our sexual relationships, right? But also, I think being aware of these places where we do experience discordant desires, being honest about that and bringing all of that to God.
Yeah, and I know your organization really hears a lot of struggles of young people who are also experiencing, you know, issues with their sexuality. What do you tell them when they have questions about attraction and desire?
You know, I think the invitation is first to bring that to God, right? This recognition that all of us experience these discordant experiences of desire, right? And it doesn't have to just be same-sex attraction, but all of us wrestle with that. And to be aware of what's right and what's wrong, but also saying, you know, this experiencing this doesn't need to be a cause for shame, but it can be an invitation to surrender more deeply to Jesus in your own life, to have, you know, increased vulnerability in some of your close relationships.
Yeah, another thing I want to talk about, the Institute for Family Studies has published a number of studies that show waiting for marriages ensures a more successful and happier marriage. Does that happen to resonate with people that you're talking to today? And what are you seeing?
Yeah, you know, I think that there is, you know, as we grow in chastity, right, as a virtue, that's about developing habits, right? It's developing these habits of using our reason and our intellect within our desires. And so I think there's a lot that can be gained as we grow in self-discipline, right, in our lives.
Perfect. Anna, thank you so much for being with us and talking to us about all this. We appreciate it. Happy Valentine's Day.
And to you.
I'll find tonight a kayaker in Chile is getting a second chance after being swallowed by a whale. Can you believe that? The stunning moment was all captured on video by the 24-year-old's father. The whale swallowed the man for just a few moments. Then he spit him right back out. Humpback whales typically feast on krill and small fish, not people, as we know. And when the men were asked if they would ever kayak again, well, they said, of course. I may double think that, but they said yes. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.